job or have ever had a job, you've felt it. If you're a parent, you've heard it. And if you have siblings, you've said it. And it's this phrase that comes out of our mouths so easily. It's this phrase, three little words, that sometimes can color our whole world. That's not fair. Whenever I was a kid and I would say this phrase to my mom about some way that she had allowed my little brother to do something that I didn't get a chance to do, which, by the way, I perpetuate on my kids now also. So my older kids always feel like that the younger one gets away with everything. And I'm like, yeah, she does, because we're going to have to depend on her later and older in life, and you guys are going to be gone, so I'm putting my money on her. But we do treat them a little bit differently, right? And when we would say this to our parent, when you say that's not fair, what did you hear back? What is it? Life's not fair. Yeah, or, and that was like the gentle reply. The other one is like, oh, I'll show you fair. You want fair? We'll do fair. We have this inborn, this innate idea that there is this sense of fairness, and it's supposed to be at work all the time. And whenever you or I say that's not fair, there are a few assumptions that we're making. Like, let's just be honest about those. One is the assumption that I can objectively assess what fair is in any given situation, right? That I have a better understanding and grip of the standard of fairness. And then I'm also assuming that in this situation of which I am a part, I'm still able to unbiasedly, objectively say what's fair. And then thirdly, it's always that I'm the one who's on the wrong side of fair, right? That's just the way this works. And really, when we say it's not fair, more often what we actually mean is that's not what I want. Well, if any place in the whole world, in all of the universe, could be fair, you would think, and you're here at church partially because I think you believe this, you would think that the kingdom of heaven, that at least if life is not fair and our parents aren't fair and the boss isn't fair, at least God is fair, right? Let's see. Matthew chapter 20. I'm going to read verses 1 through 16. It's a little parable that Jesus tells about fairness. And before we read it, let me just tell you what's happened immediately preceding. Jesus has been now, it's kind of coming down to the end of life, and he's been with his disciples. And just recently, they've had several interactions with people that seem to, on the outside, look like the kind of folks that would make the cut for heaven. There's one guy they call the rich young ruler. He's got it all. He's handsome and he's powerful and he's loaded. And he comes to Jesus, not only that, but he's also done everything right, so he says. And he's like, what else do I need to do to get in the kingdom of heaven? And Jesus is like, oh, no worries. Just sell everything you have and give it to the poor and then come on. And the guy walks away sad. And the disciples are like, come on, Jesus. If he can't get in, there is no way that I'm getting in. This is impossible. And Peter's kind of loud mouth, you know, he's always shooting off. And he says it, he's like, this is not fair. We have given up everything to follow you, Jesus. We gave up our jobs. Our families think we're crazy. The adversity around is picking up. People want you dead. Like, we've given all this up. What in the world is possibly going to be our reward? And he says, Peter, you're finally getting it. With man, this is impossible. But with God, all is possible. And he says this little phrase. He says, Peter, one day you're going to receive a reward and everything you've given up is going to be given back to you. But the last will be first and the first will be last. And Peter says, what does that mean? And Jesus responds with this parable, which, side note, if you ever ask Jesus a question and his response is to tell you a little story, it is not going well for you. I just know that. It's not good. So he says, Peter, for the kingdom of heaven is like a landowner who went out early in the morning to hire workers for his vineyard. He agreed to pay them a denarius for the day and sent them into his vineyard. And then about 9 in the morning, he went out and he saw others standing in the marketplace doing nothing. And he told them, you also go and work in my vineyard, and I will pay you whatever is right. So they went. He went out again about noon and then about 3 in the afternoon, and he did the same thing. And about 5 in the afternoon, about an hour before quitting time, 5 in the afternoon he went out and he found still others standing around. And he asked them, "Why have you been standing here all day long doing nothing?" "Because no one has hired us," they answered. He said to them, "You also go and work in my vineyard." When evening came, the owner of the vineyard said to his foreman, "Call the workers and pay them their wages, beginning with the last ones hired and then going on to the first." The workers who were hired about 5 in the afternoon, they came and each received a denarius. So when those came who were hired first at 6 a.m., they expected to receive more. But each one of them also received a denarius. When they received it, they began to grumble against the landowner. "These who were hired last worked only 1 hour," they said, "and you've made them equal to us, who have borne the burden of the work and the heat of the day?" But he answered one of them, "I'm not being unfair to you, friend. Didn't you agree to work for a denarius? Take your pay and go. I want to give the one who was hired last the same as I gave you. Don't I have the right to do what I want with my own money? Or are you envious because I am generous?" So the last will be first, and the first will be last. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. And that's not fair, right? There's a part of every one of us in this room or watching online right now that feels, when you hear that story, you're like, "Jesus, I don't know." Because maybe we are okay with the landowner's like hiring practices, that he brings people on at different times of the day, right? He's got a vineyard that's full of bursting harvest. He's got to get this in. It's like, got to happen today. So fine, if you want to go out and hire all kinds of different people at different stages, but your comp plan, your payroll policy is awful. I want to ask you a question before we keep moving, and it's this. As you read the story, as you heard the story, which of the workers do you want to be? I want you to write down on your note sheet or on your phone, just write down which one of the workers you want to be. Hold on to that. Don't tell anybody. Some of you are afraid to write down chicken. Come on. I thought about this a lot this week. Like, which one of these workers would I want to be? Before we answer it, I want to go and give you the perspective of each one. Those who were hired first, those who were hired last, and then the landowner himself. First, perspective of the 6 a.m., the first hour workers. One thing that you have to know for this story to really make sense is that at this time in this era in ancient Near East Jerusalem, in the marketplace, there would always be a group of people who were there as day laborers. People who would show up early in the morning and they would hope to get hired on by somebody. When I was back in Charlotte in 2001, right after 9/11, the whole world was uncertain of what was going to happen, and I had a sales job at the time, and I got laid off. And so for a period of a few months, just to make sure that I could pay the bills, I was a day laborer. I would show up at this spot downtown Charlotte, and you would get in line, and somebody would come in, and they would hire for the jobs they just needed that day. You got paid daily. It was really helpful. And that's kind of like what's happening here, except the people who showed up for day labor, they didn't have a regular job. They didn't have a family that could provide. It meant that they didn't have like agricultural means. There was no field for them to be working in. This was the most vulnerable, on the edge group of people in society. And they would stand there and wait for someone to pick them up. The rate that Jesus tells in the story that they're paid, a denarius, that's like a regular day's wages. So that's a fair rate. Call it $20 an hour for 12 hours work, $240 for the day. So if you started off the morning and you were down in the center square of the town and you had no prospects for work, you were going to have to go home again to your wife and your kids and say, "I'm sorry, there's just no money for food again today." And somebody hired you for $240 for the day, you felt pretty good. And if you got picked first thing in the morning, when everybody was out there, there must have, it's like kickball in the third grade, you know, playground. You, either you were taller or more athletic, or you were faster or stronger. Like, there was something about you that caught the eye of the landowner. So they're thinking, as they start their work, wow, I'm so lucky today. So glad that Mr. Landowner came and hired me, because I was going to go home penniless again. They start out really happy about what's happened in their life. But it doesn't take very long until they get to a place where they start changing their perspective. They change the standard. At the beginning, it was just a gift that they got hired at all. By the end, did you hear what they said to the landowner? We've been out here slaving. What started as a gift became a burden. How many of you have ever prayed for something, waited for something, kind of just believed for something to come into your life, and then you get it, and sometime later, it is the biggest burden you have? Isn't it weird how the answers to our prayers from yesterday sometimes move into a moment of just our entitlement? We just think we deserve it. And that's what happened with them. They watched as later in the day, other people would show up to come do the same job that they did. And they have to be thinking, one, man, I am really good. He picked me first. But two, wow, there's a lot of work to do in this vineyard. There's more than I could handle on my own. Then at the end, they get the people hired last to come up first, and they get paid, what, a denarius. Remember, the first folks who were chosen, they contracted for that amount. The owner said, hey, we'll pay you this. How's that sound? Good. By later in the day, whenever they see the one-hour workers walk up and get their paycheck, and it's the thing they contracted for, in their mind, they're like, it's not $240 bucks today. I'm going home with, what's that, $240? It's $240 an hour. That's what he's paying. I'm going to show up at home, and Rachel's going to get a $2,800 check tonight. But then they get paid the same. And man, something in their heart starts going rotten. You ever been there? Like, where your entitlement just begins to turn you rancid from the inside. They also changed how they saw the landowner. At 6 a.m., he was the hero. But by the end of the day, he was unfair, unjust, cheap, ungenerous kind of guy. Isn't that interesting how we do that with God sometimes too? When he's answering our prayers the way we want, when things are going up and to the right, I'm so glad to be your kid, child of the king. And when things start to not go the way we want, how could you? I have prayed. I have gone 52 straight weeks to church. I even go to the early service on Easter whenever Jason asks me to. By the way, 7:30 a.m. on Easter is the service you need to go to, so we have room for everybody else. Just saying. It's funny how that changes. And I started thinking about, why is it, I'll just go ahead and put my cards on the table. Why is it that when I ask myself the question, which one of these workers I want to be, that I said the last ones? Why do you think that is? What is it about me, and maybe this is just my own little moment of therapy, but what is it about me that thinks that it's better to kind of do life my own way and then at the very end skate into God's kingdom? It's telling, isn't it? The perspective of the first hour workers was one of grumbling and complaining. It was, that's not fair. Here's the perspective of the last hour workers. So I used to think these were the lucky ones. And then I started digging in and like really imagining, putting myself in their job for that whole day. And if you and I didn't have any money and we were going to go home and once again have to look our wife or our kids in the face and say, I'm sorry, I know your stomach is growling, but there's no food tonight. At least the early workers, they knew at 6 a.m. that things were going to be okay for them that day, right? The later workers, they sat there in uncertainty and doubt every time another person would come and not pick them. It was shame. Every moment that they felt rejection and devalued, their sense, their mental health was really bad by 4:30, 5 o'clock in the afternoon. They waited for somebody to see in them what they believed there could be, and it just seemed like the world around them didn't see anything of value at all. And then the last minute, 5 o'clock, 1 hour to go before the end of the day, they get picked. There was high-fiving and back-slapping, and they were so excited to be able to go work for an hour. And what's funny is every single one of us knows what the first hour of our work is like. It's not very productive, is it? It takes you a while to settle in, get your coffee, check on Bob down the hall. Like, we don't do a whole lot in the first hour of work. Not only that, they're excited about it, but they're looking at these folks who've been here all day. They're sweaty and dirty, and they've done a whole bunch of work. And those folks are looking at them with the same sneers and jeers as everybody else had all day. Look at these last-minute workers. But they're so overwhelmed by the last second win that they received. It was like hopeless all day. They were definitely going to lose. And at the last moment, victory came, kind of like the Duke Blue Devils last night. I almost couldn't preach today. There's another little note here. It's funny. The landowner says to them, the people hired at 9 and 3, and noon, hey, come and I'll give you whatever's fair. He doesn't tell them how much it's going to be. The folks hired at the end, he doesn't tell them anything. He just says, go work in the vineyard. Can you imagine accepting a job and not knowing what the pay is going to be? Like, that's how excited that they are to go in. It's also indicative of how vulnerable those people were to exploitation. They are just up to the whims of the person in power. Even the other workers who had been there all day, at least, had a contract. So I started asking myself, why do I think it's better to do things my way and sneak in at the last second? And that was telling. But then even more telling was this. Why do I think that I haven't been doing that all along? What is it about me that makes me think that I resemble the early workers more? That I'm somehow more righteous or better, or I've done more for God? Like, why do I even think, Barbara Brown Taylor, when she writes about this in one of her books, she says this, who told you that you were a 12-hour worker to begin with? Jesus said it, Matthew 19:30. Many who are first will be last, and many who are last will be first. Folks, if you have experienced success in your life, in your spiritual life, or in your regular life, it doesn't matter. If you've experienced that, it does not mean that we deserve more. It means we are a bigger debtor to grace. Because everything that we have has been given by Him anyway. It should like wake us up even more to just how amazing this grace is. It's funny, even that song, you know, that's a beautiful old song. Amazing grace. It truly is. But when we look at who else gets to receive that grace, when we look around at the people that we kind of, we won't say it out loud, but internally we feel it, like they don't deserve it, he doesn't deserve it, cannot believe he got it. We can say amazing grace all day, but the second line is sometimes harder to stomach. Amazing grace, how sweet the sound. It's not fair. The last hour workers, they looked at the landowner, and all they knew is that he showed up and rescued them in a moment where they could not rescue themselves. So that's the perspective of the last workers. How about the perspective of the landowner himself? He went into the marketplace looking at this rabble of people, and he had to know that every single one of them obviously wasn't that well healed, wasn't that well qualified, or they wouldn't have been in that line to begin with. So everything that he gave out was a gift. He wanted all of them to come and be a part of the work he was doing, and it really didn't matter to him whether they were qualified or not. His move is all grace. In fact, grace is the most powerful force, not only in this story, it's the most powerful force in the universe. I think the idea of karma is like the second most powerful, right? You get what you deserve. It seems like that happens pretty often if you wait long enough. But grace is even stronger. Grace says you don't get what you deserve. You get through Christ what you don't deserve. That overwhelms and upends everything about my understanding of life. It's not fair because God deals with us on the basis of what we need, not what we deserve. That's what the landowner did for the folks who were standing around. He dealt with them on what their need was. The need was employment. The need was a paycheck. The need was provision. The need was rescue. He didn't look at any of them and think they deserved it. He looked at all of them and thought, I can't wait to make you mine. Isn't that cool? God uses his resources differently than you and I. 1 Corinthians 4, 7 and 8 says this, what do you have that you didn't receive? And if you did receive it, why do you boast as though you did not? Already you have all you want. Already you've become rich in Christ. If you find yourself in the kingdom of heaven, whether you started as a 6-year-old or whether in your 80s you decided to make this change, wherever you find yourself in the kingdom, it is a gift of grace. You are rich beyond comparison, and you have been given more than you or I could ever deserve. Everything we have is a gift. The landowner knew it. But he uses his resources kind of weird. Romans 4, 5, it says that God justifies the ungodly. So just think about that for a moment. God justifies the ungodly. That's not fair, right? We feel like you got to kind of get yourself cleaned up and worked up in order to be good enough for this place. I literally had somebody a couple weeks ago that came into church, sat down, and afterwards he was like, whew. I'm like, was the sermon that rough or what? And he's like, I was just waiting to spontaneously combust that I walked into a church building. If you knew who I've been my whole life, God should have zapped me on the spot. And on the one hand, I'm kind of laughing that people still think that way. And on the other hand, I'm laughing that I don't. Because that's every single one of us. If you knew, this is all grace. The next thing that happens in the story is that Jesus wraps it up, and then he tells them, all the disciples, all the people listening, about the next few days. As we get close to Easter, this is perfect timing. He says that not only is the kingdom of heaven unfair and God can use his grace and his generosity in any way he wants and you're not going to understand it, but you and I both should get back to the place where we are overwhelmed with the amazing grace we've received. He says, not only that, but I don't ask you to go through anything that I won't. And what he describes next at the end of this little pericope is the greatest act of unfairness that becomes the greatest moment of grace the world's ever seen. In verse 17, Jesus goes on, it says, they were going up to Jerusalem, and on the way, he took the 12 aside, and he said to them, we're going up to Jerusalem, and the Son of Man will be delivered over to the chief priest and the teachers of the law. They will condemn him to death and will hand him over to the Gentiles to be mocked and flogged and crucified. And on the third day, he'll be raised to life. Jesus says the greatest act, the greatest miscarriage of justice that you could ever imagine is about to take place, and it's all so that you can receive grace. See, what was about to happen is he, the greatest human who's ever lived, the perfect picture of what a human should be, full truth, full grace, full love, always hopeful, usually humorous if you read the scripture enough. He is kind to people that he shouldn't be. He welcomes people that treat him poorly. He is the epitome of what we want. There's nothing that you could blame about him. And it says he's going to be taken and subjected to the process that was meant to dehumanize you. The greatest human ever. Made into what was known at the time through crucifixion, not even human at all. completely deformed, humiliated, shamed, disgusted. If you lived at that time, you weren't allowed to even look at crucifixion if you walked past it. And so Jesus, the perfect one, in order so that we could be any of these workers, early, late, doesn't matter, completely undeserving of this grace, he goes through that act of unfairness so that he could be raised again to life. The Lamb of God, the sacrificial one given for us that becomes the lion. That's an incredible turnaround, and it's not fair. And it wasn't fair to him, and he said, bring it on, because I want to invite you, who don't deserve it, into this kingdom as well. He was raised up to a place, a seat of honor and power, and now he gets to call the shots. And guess what? Sometimes it doesn't look fair on the side of eternity. I know that in your life there are places where you've prayed or you've waited or you've struggled or you've hung in there and it feels like it's just not fair, God. And all I want to say to you is when we focus on the cross and what he's doing, it allows us to keep walking, believing that even if it's not fair, it can be good. Because that's the difference in the kingdom, right? I mean, I got good news for you. God is not fair. He's better than that. He's good. He's generous. He's lavish. He's prodigal. He's reckless with his grace. Isn't that good news? I don't care where you are today, wherever you find yourself walking in, like, this is the God that you need to focus your eyes on. Take all your junk. We're about to go to the communion table where you're going to have a chance to receive a physical reminder of this grace. Take all your junk and all your stuff and all your failure, all the things that you brought with you, and walk up to this table saying, God, here it is, and receive back from him life and love and mercy. Man, this is good stuff. It was always hidden right in plain sight, right there for us to see. Disciples struggled with it. Religious leaders couldn't see it. And sometimes I think you and I get twisted. So, which of the characters do you want to be? If you want to change your answer, I'll give you time. At the end of the day, truthfully, we're all last hour workers. And truthfully, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter, because if you trust in this invitation of Christ, we all get to be in the vineyard. So let me pray for us. Father, it's really kind of crazy to think that we have in us this deep desire. It almost feels like breathing. It's just so natural for us to look around and want to say what is fair, and that we desire fairness, not just for others, but for ourselves. And yet, Jesus, you, who have all power, who could do it any way you wanted, you chose to subject yourself to unfairness so that we could receive something better, some grace, that we might find that the thing that we think we want, we actually don't. We don't want justice. We don't want fairness. I mean, sure, in the way that we work, in the way that we live, in the way that we want our country and our neighborhoods to run, yes, fairness. But for us, we want grace. We want mercy. And that's exactly what you offered. Jesus, I thank you that your grace changes us too. That when we experience it, we just can't stay the same. We just can't receive that call to come in and then kind of ho-hum our way through doing things our own way. That when we really grasp it, when it really penetrates our heart, it changes us from the inside out. God, please, would you do work in each of us that lets us change our perspective, that we would never again maybe say, oh, I'd like to be the last hour worker. God, would we see the beauty of living your way, of living your kingdom, of walking in your grace, not just the grace that gets us in, but the grace that allows us to take every breath, every step. Every act of work we've done on your behalf is not labor, it's worship. And so would you receive now our worship, even as we trust you today, with these elements, with this reminder of your goodness, would you receive it as worship? Jesus, thank you that as we near this reminder of what it took for you to give us the kind of grace that would redeem and restore us back, that you were willing and you did what was necessary. I can't get over it. I can't believe it. So would you overwhelm our imaginations and our hearts this week, this day, with just how good you are? And we pray in your name.